Welcome to Engelberg Center Live. This is a podcast that we use at the Engelberg Center to focus on interesting events and topics that are in the Engelberg Center universe. Today, I'm really excited to be talking to two of the partners who helped launch our recent website, Glam3D. I've got Neil Stimler and Thomas Flynn, who are going to talk about what this website is, why we developed the resource, and how you can use it. So first, we're going to talk about glam3d.org today. This is a website that the Engelberg Center recently launched. To kick things off, Neil, do you want to talk about just what glam3d.org is?
Yes, glam3d.org is a publication, online publication, that is a resource primarily targeted at cultural institutions and cultural resource professionals, creating 3D models from cultural resources that are in institutions or environments around the world. And it's meant to be something that activates and primes further engagement with 3D scanning and sharing for culture, especially in the times of COVID-19, but even beyond as we think about a more interconnected world.
And it really focuses on 3D models and open access, correct?
Absolutely, yes. Open access is a key and essential thread throughout the entire publication.
And Thomas, how did you get involved with the site?
So having worked in my role at Sketchfab with museums around the world, creating, publishing, advising on the production of 3D models captured from cultural resources, and generally getting involved in the digital cultural heritage space, it became or has become apparent over the last few years that there are certain topics that are being addressed or in need of being addressed by a publication like glam3d.org or something similar, covering the digitization of cultural resources, the open access strategy, as Neil mentioned, and as well as a simple, clear way of for people to understand copyright as related to cultural resources. So I met with Neil. I think I knew Neil from online in general. I think if that's a way you can know someone these days. But then when working in New York, we met up at a drinking about museums. Is that right, Neil?
Yes, could have been.
Event. I've found that we had sympathetic approaches to the open access and an interest in 3D. And Neil then got me in contact with you, Michael.
Yeah, so Thomas, you really come to this from Sketchfab, from that digitization and dissemination side of things. Neil, what is your background? How are you connected to museums and especially to the open access part of it?
So I've spent a good portion of my career working on open and access initiatives. I've guided the Metropolitan Museum of Art with its open access launch in 2017, supported the Cleveland Museum of Art with their open access program in 2019 in the Smithsonian Institution. So open access has been a core part of my professional practice, and with these three institutions just mentioned, have helped release hundreds of thousands and millions of cultural resources into the public domain with the Creative Commons Zero designation, including two-dimensional images where we started with JPEGs and TIFFs, and then that we've now seen the emergence more of the 3D models many times in partnership with Sketchfab, a leading example there being with the Cleveland Museum of Art.
Open access is a term that some people are familiar with, but other people aren't. And the really core idea behind open access is that these files, these representations are being made available to the public in a way that really frees them to use them and engage with them and build on them however they want. And so when we think about open access resources, it means those resources that have been digitized and then made available under open access terms, which usually have two layers. The first is a copyright layer, and most often they use a Creative Commons Zero public domain dedication to just make it clear that they are not, the institution that's making the files available are not claiming any copyright interest in the files. So they're basically inviting the public to say, these are in the public domain, they're for anyone to use, do whatever you want with them. And then also there's a second layer, which is a kind of legal terms of service layer, because you could see a situation where a museum says, we're not claiming copyright on these, but our terms of service really restrict how people are going to use these. But a good open access program, in addition to having no copyright claim on it, also does not have terms and conditions that limit the kind of uses. And so all of this is an idea that we're going to take these shared cultural resources and make them available to the public so the public can essentially do whatever they want with them. And this is a moment where that kind of digital interaction and free-flowing digital interaction with cultural resources is really important. Obviously, when we planned this a number of months ago, we were not anticipating the moment that we are in now. But Neil or Thomas, what is, you know, this moment, this COVID moment, when all of a sudden institutions are facing any number of challenges, why is this publication more interesting or more important now than we may have anticipated when we began thinking about the project?
From the work that I do, I've seen an increase in inbound interest in the platform. Sketchfab runs a cultural heritage program offering free and discounted subscriptions to cultural organizations. And I've had seen a general increase in the number of inbound requests to join that program, but also requests that specifically mention the current situation, the pandemic, as a reason why they're looking to create and build new online experiences for their audiences. So there are a lot of organizations that are looking to produce 3D and to publish it. So it's really about putting 3D in front of people and possibly publishing the data under an open access license. I think it's just part of a wider trend of increasing digital engagement for museum audiences.
And Neil, when we were thinking about this project, who is the audience, right? We have this website, glam3d.org. It's got an amazing amount of resources on it, but it's got resources that are not necessarily, you know, all things to all people. Who do you think about when you think about the audience of this site?
Well, I think about there's several different layers of users for the site and contributors, hopefully we can see in the future joining the project. So I would definitely think of this as a resource for the executive level of an organization that's trying to understand the next wave of digitization. So part of my work at the Metropolitan Museum for many years was to work on the rapid digitization of the collection to increase access to it, but also the utility of it for key constituencies being scholars and academics publishing books, also for teachers and educators that wanted to use those images and objects in the classroom or for students to reuse them creatively for their own presentations and creations. And the open access documentation, too, I think is also very valuable for what we might think of as third parties or individual creators that want to better understand the relationship of how to work with an institution and what that's like, and also begin to embrace and further push the boundaries of those commercial reuses that an open access policy with Creative Commons Zero Public Domain dedication or Creative Commons attribution enables with its terms. And a key answer to your earlier question, too, Michael, about the importance of this website now is, as I was mentioning before, the next wave of digitization. We see an increasing need to move beyond borders, and that's something that the internet can help us do. People that live in countries all over the world can make use of the collections that connect to them and their experiences and their interests. And we're providing an opportunity with the publication itself to empower new ways of thinking and creating. And I'm really excited about the potentials for new creative outputs, new fusions, new types of making that are enabled just by the virtue of these cultural resources being made available under such open terms. And a key aspect as well is that we don't necessarily always know what the use cases will be. And in the case of 2D images, we've seen some really exciting growth through partnership programs that's happened since those initial launches, where millions of people have reused and viewed those artworks beyond the borders of an institution's own website. And now we're seeing expansion into video games with things like Animal Crossing. So the potential for 3D, I think, especially to be very important as we look at the frontiers of augmented reality or mixed reality or virtual reality when we are consuming and engaging with art and culture in our homes or shared with our families and friends over internet-connected devices is really prime.
One of the things that I think initially presented a challenge, but is now very much an opportunity for the site, is that the nature of 3D digitization in the glam space is fairly new and is evolving rapidly. And so when we were thinking about how to construct the site and how to pull together what were best practices, we knew that those best practices might be best practices at that moment, but weren't necessarily going to be best practices forever. Thomas, how did you, when you did a lot of the work in the technical areas of the paper on how to think about really approaching a lot of these programs from a technical standpoint, how did you think about deciding how to define what was cutting edge at the moment? And then thinking about going forward, how do you think about maintaining the site to make sure that we stay up to date with those best practices?
The way that I was thinking of describing 3D, and to go back to the idea of the audience for the publication, I think it is a publication for the executive levels within an organization, but also I like to think of it as a handbook for people who have come to 3D, to open access, to copyright from a completely, you know, beginner standpoint. And so for me, the sections about 3D begin at a very, very basic level, explaining what a 3D model is. But then really, it's a snapshot of the techniques for 3D capture that I have been following over the last 5 years since I began working with 3D in museums and working with Sketchfab. Looking across museums, archives, any glam organization across the globe that use primarily using Sketchfab to publish their 3D, but seeing which techniques are being used the most, the way that people describe, you know, this 3D model was created with a photogrammetry workflow or a laser scanning workflow. But at the same time, I think marrying that up with the success of the presentation of the 3D model, the completeness, like also, you know, the way it's been presented and released and used. So those are being able to see how different organizations have approached this all fed into the bits that I was picking out and presenting as the current state of 3D capture. And, you know, like most softwares, each year, each you know, cycle, the softwares will improve, the hardware will improve, new 3D scanning technology will be invented or enhanced. And I think almost it's not as important how you make your 3D, the capture process, as to what you do with it afterwards and what your goal is, because that will dictate what capture process you use. In the paper, in the publication, it covers the main capture techniques. There are more capture techniques, 3D capture techniques out there, but the ones that are being used the most and being discussed in existing cultural heritage community groups, for example, the AAAF community group or the Community Standards for 3D Preservation group. The things that are already under discussion and the way things are moving, I try to kind of capture those conversations as well. And as they develop, I think that will inform updates that we make to the publication as well.
We've been talking about institutions who are looking to get involved in this and are looking to engage, and all the forces historically and then most recently, more urgently, that have been pushing glam organizations to start thinking about how to develop and grow and sustain a 3D program. Both of you obviously work with a number of institutions on how to do that. So I'd like to hear from both of you. If you're talking to an institution that is interested in this, is intrigued, has looked over the site, and is now trying to understand, okay, how do we really think about this and approach this process? What do you recommend? How do you tell those institutions, both the executive level and the people who will be tasked with really executing on a day-to-day basis, how to start thinking about those, building one of these programs? Neil, we can start with you.
Thanks, Michael. I think one of the key things to think about on the highest level is developing a program that is repeatable, scalable, and sustainable. So one of the advantages that has been achieved with 2D digitization is that most cultural institutions have figured out how to use JPEGs and TIFFs and to embed metadata and use metadata well to deliver large-scale programs. And the techniques and tools for doing that and open source resources are widely available. So where we need to see the next level of performance is translating that kind of efficiency operationally to the 3D space. And this also means institutions having to learn how to really understand their collections in whole new ways. So Thomas could speak to this as well, but the issue of material and surface and thinking about the new dimensionality that these collections are now entering in the environments and spaces in which they're going to be a part. So it's both a question for scholarly thinking, but also for the practical operations of how do we actually work in multiple dimensions beyond the flat screen.
Thomas, how about you? What do you, when you're talking to cultural institutions who are interested in getting started with 3D, how do you recommend that they think about approaching this?
As we've mentioned, it's a fairly new frontier for cultural organizations. But at the same time, you know, there has been 3D production in some institutions for a fairly long time. I think the key things for me, when I speak with, at length with an organization, is to help them to understand 3D as a medium. When this is in the publication itself, it's explained that, or not explained, but it's suggested that when people talk about 3D, a lot of people will jump to, oh, we're talking about virtual reality, we're talking about augmented reality, we're talking about 360 video, we're talking about video games, we're talking about 3D printing. And these are all use 3D, the files in some way, but they're not technically the medium of 3D. And I think kind of understanding that 3D can be a discrete file that is in turn a resource to build other things. That's one thing I try and get across is where 3D, cultural heritage related 3D, can overlap with other industries who are currently using 3D as well, whether that's TV and film, manufacturing. There's lots of different options available. You know, why would you produce 3D? Well, showing people the options they have. And then depending on the goals that an organization may have, I think helping them to understand the available audiences for 3D, whether it's an organization that's thinking really of publishing 3D online to engage with audiences, it might be introducing the idea that the same 3D could be useful for internal audiences and stakeholders within their organization to use, or if it's a museum or gallery who has a very internal audience focused approach, say for using 3D in conservation and change management, maybe trying to bring them around to the idea that there are audiences outside of the walls of your institution who are, you know, on a very basic level, they would love to see the 3D. And then beyond that, there are plenty of people who are interested in using, reusing, remixing that same 3D.
Can you talk a little bit more about that distinction that you're drawing out between 3D as a medium in and of itself and the various applications of 3D?
I think the distinction is important because technology and cultural organizations has a complicated past, if you will. I think that the kind of 2000s saw a lot of museums producing apps, and for a while, you know, this was the hot topic. And then, you know, in a few years, it became, you know, almost a joke about, like, let's just make an app to solve a problem that we're having. So this idea of certain organizations being averse to jumping on the bandwagon, and that's what 3D can be seen as sometimes. So I think breaking down where this idea of 3D as a resource, as a medium, and separating that from the idea of producing a VR experience, which is kind of, it's an end. you publish your virtual reality experience or your augmented reality experience, but 3D as a resource is an ongoing project that it doesn't necessarily have an end. You have goals and outcomes when producing 3D, I think can really help an organization that hasn't begun producing 3D content to know the limits of what they're doing, but also the opportunities that are present.
I'd like to add to that too, Michael, as well, and say that we can think of 3D models of cultural resources as mission critical assets. The same can be said of two-dimensional images and data and publications. All of the content, the cultural content that connects to these things, that helps tell stories and gives context and meaning and insight. This is a critical asset that any organization, cultural organization, should be trying to develop and build, because it's a critical tool to be redeployed in so many different contexts and uses, whether it be educational or product making. It's an essential part of the toolkit that a cultural organization needs to have.
And Neil, I know that this paper and the site is about 3D, but it's not about just 3D. It's about 3D and open access. And a big part of the work that you did and you were in charge of drafting for this site was about the open access part. And open access can be exciting in a lot of cases, but there are plenty of institutions who are concerned when they hear about open access because they think, well, wait, we have this stuff and we're just going to give it away for free? How is that even going to work? When you talk to organizations, and as we were discussing the creation of this site, how do you think about the economics of open access and why it is not just viable, but important to really focus on an open access based approach?
The critical part of the economics of open access is that many cultural institutions are spending too much money on the administration of traditional licensing programs. And they can further optimize the revenue that they should be capturing by reprioritizing that workforce into more meaningful tasks, including building new opportunities for revenue generation through partnerships with commercial companies, and also really emphasizing the importance of engagement. So what we've seen with open access, especially in the realm of partnership, is that when institutions partner with Wikimedia communities globally, with Internet Archive, with Creative Commons, the access and interest and reach of their collections overwhelms the number of visits they would have on their own collections websites. So from the engagement side, there's a critical opportunity there to raise awareness about those collections. We've also seen some really great examples of innovative types of partnerships, for example, with the National Gallery of Denmark, SMK, in its collaboration with Shapeways, doing the Art Jewels contest, which promoted an innovative way of responding to SMK's open access collection to make 3D jewelry, and then that jewelry was then sold. So we need to see more innovation and more investment from cultural institutions along the lines of the Rijksmuseum to be building these new opportunities for the economy, because the traditional licensing models just don't support it anymore.
And Thomas, when you're talking to organizations and institutions and they're trying to say, okay, well, we've digitized these works in our collection and we've made them available, how should we think about metrics? How should we think about success? How do we know if this is working? Do you have conversations with those organizations? And when you do, what do you tell them?
I think that kind of in essence, partly in the way that open access works is that you are offering something freely and the metrics, one of the metrics, for example, knowing how somebody has used a 3D model would be to ask people to tell you. But if you are releasing it under a CC0 public domain dedication, nobody's under the obligation to tell you what they've done with it. So it's in part not necessarily to measure what people have done with it. You can easily measure if people have visited the web page where you're hosting your 3D model. On Sketchfab, we have a download counter, so you can see the number of times a model has been downloaded. You could put up an intermediary page at the time of download saying, what are you going to do with this 3D model? Let us know. But in a sense, I think that may be creating a barrier to access the 3D data in itself. I think the measure of success, it takes a long time for data that you publish online, whether it's 3D or otherwise, to disseminate and permeate the audiences that would make use of it, of that data. So it can be a waiting game and a kind of an activity that you have to undertake yourself to search out who's using your data, to be mindful of where it might turn up. It might be complete serendipity that you see, and this is from my own experience of publishing 3D, for example, through the British Museum, but also the National Museums of Sweden. They saw one of their shields that they had digitized turn up in a Post Malone music video. It's briefly in for 3 seconds, and I think that wasn't credited, but somebody at the museum had seen it. So that is a success, I think, for that piece of media. But the way that you can measure it is not really defined in some ways. You could also say that just the fact that you are making 3D available under open access is the success that you're looking for, because you are publishing possibly public domain content or a digitized version of public domain content in the first place. So you're doing right by the collection that you hold by publishing it. It depends, I think. One more thing that I think is worth thinking of is the results to a survey that I ran with cultural heritage users on Sketchfab in 2019. One of the questions was, do you make your 3D models available for download? And if not, why not? And the overwhelming reason for the organizations that responded to not publish their 3D models for download was that they have no control over what happens after it's been downloaded. And this idea that there are bad actors out there waiting to jump on cultural content and do something naughty with it, I think is pretty overblown. The successes and the good uses of cultural content outweighs that chance for me.
Michael, just to jump in on that too, another important way of measuring success, I think maybe looking at a different view from Thomas, is with digital first solutions like 3D models for engagement and use of collections by the public or by commercial entities, cultural institutions actually get measurable metrics that they can use to understand levels of engagement, whether that be views and downloads on a basic level. And then, as Thomas also mentioned, the serendipity of the things that are created down the line. So institutions that aren't taking advantage of these types of opportunities to have measurable engagement that they can show to their boards and to their curators in terms of understanding as a piece the measurable impact are missing out on that understanding they wouldn't have with these tools.
We're in this moment right now where there are enough of these examples of institutions doing 3D to see what it could look like. But I think we're still very much at the moment where people are testing and trying and seeing what works. So I wonder if both of you can take a moment and think about the future. Think about the next 6 months, think about the next maybe 3 years, the next 10 years. And what are you looking at in terms of trends in the future? What do you see as the future of this kind of 3D open access program at the GLAMS?
So I think this is a key opportunity to look at the future of collections. So there's been a trend in the past few years with the experience economy to be much more interested in immersive environments and experiences through physical interaction. And with the limitations presented to us by climate change and global health concerns, I think collections and institutions that have collections will be doing a deeper look at the value of those collections and should be further investing and assessing how those collections can be used for academic purposes or commercial purposes. So I see a greater return and focus to collections that are in place within an institution and putting further resources behind improving the quality of those assets and collections so that each institution furthermore becomes its own publisher of content and also works in partnership with other distributors to bring it to larger audiences and consumers.
Yeah, I would agree with Neil that this idea of a move towards a common approach to publishing 3D that will cover compatibility across viewing devices or experiences and interoperability. The same 3D model being viewed in many different ways And along with that, I think the challenge of digitization at scale will be addressed either by, you know, new or easier ways to digitize large portions of collections, or the approach changing to you know, an understanding that it is a time consuming process to produce 3D. So let's use the approach of digitizing the right things at the right time, at the right volume, in the right way. But the point being that things are getting digitized in 3D, that it becomes a normal kind of part of the glam process, where 3D can touch many different pieces of work within an organization. As I mentioned, internal, external, I think we'll see it becoming less of a hot topic and more of a standard.
I want to wrap up this conversation by actually asking you, the listener, for two things. The first is, hopefully you've gotten a sense that from this conversation that glam3d.org has a wide range of resources talking about the conceptual approaches of open access and 3D digitization, the technical aspects of picking the right objects, scanning them, storing them, archiving them, the legal aspects of making sure that you are licensing things correctly, partnership aspects, all of these things. So the first thing I want to do is really to invite you to go to glam3d.org, check it out, poke around, and hopefully it is a useful resource to you as you go forward. The second thing I want to ask is to make a request, and that is that we very much see glam3d.org as a growing resource and an evolving resource and a place where best practices are housed, with those best practices evolving over time. And so if you go and check it out and poke around and realize we're missing something, or that something was true when we wrote it, but that it has been surpassed by practice or technology, please let us know and reach out, because we really hope to be able to continue to grow and expand this resource over time to keep up with the growth and expansion of 3D open access. So with that, I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank Neil and Thomas both for all of the work that they did to build this resource and for being on the podcast. So thank you both.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Engelberg Center Live is the podcast home to a wide range of events and discussions from the Engelberg Center on Innovation, Law, and Policy at NYU Law. It is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 international license. For more information about the Engelberg Center, you can follow us on Twitter at NYU Engelberg and visit the website engelberg.center. Thanks for listening.